Welcome to Logic Gate, episode number 3, where we're discussing the Star Wars TV show Andor on Disney Plus. I'm your host, Scott, and I'm joined by my two friends, Doug
Hello.
and Jason.
Hey.
Let's jump right in. Okay, so this episode was titled Reckoning, which we can get to maybe at the end. I just thought it was worth noting that the title was Reckoning. So the one thing I noted, so the episode starts with a recap, and the one thing I took away from the recap is Cassian was talking about the box, and he described it as an untraceable NS9 star path unit. I just wanted to put that on the record because he explains a little bit about what it was later in the episode, but when he's explaining it in the past, it's an untraceable NS9 star path unit, which as far as I know, an NS9 Starpath unit is not anything I'm aware of in the Star Wars universe. You guys?
No, I swear he says it clearer in this recap than he did in the actual episode. In the episode, it was so quickly and like hard to understand. I don't know if this was actually a scene from the previous episodes, if it was like an extra scene just to
Yeah.
that would pull that would communicate what this is better, I guess, but I could be wrong.
I mean, not to get into spoilers, but wasn't it just a MacGuffin? I mean, seriously, the name was all complex, but
Yeah,
we'll get there. We'll
we'll
get
get
there.
there, but
We'll see. I think it's building to something.
we're
All
just
right.
debating the pronunciation of this thing, and it's
Right.
you say MacGuffin,
Yes.
we're trying to figure it out.
You say MacGuffin, I say NS9 Starpath unit. I
I
mean,
still like Interocitor
yeah.
too.
All right, so the actual episode opens with young Cassian climbing in and exploring the crashed ship from the last episode. You see him sort of walking into it in the last episode, and then it cuts. So in this one, you see him climb in and kind of go poking around the ship. He sees several dead bodies that have kind of yellowish
What,
or green faces.
sorry, at this point I was confused. Like, is he alone now or did he like run away? I don't really remember the context. Okay.
So the last cutscene in the previous episode was when the leader, what was her name, Casa or
Yeah,
something,
Casa.
she got injured, possibly killed, and the rest of the group picked her up and started running with her back to base. And he kind of looked and was like, "I'm going to go in here," but nobody stuck around with him.
Oh, okay. I missed
Yeah,
that.
yep.
Okay,
So not a whole lot there, but you do. It just sets up the scene that he's exploring the ship on his own. Next thing you see is a real quick scene where Cassian kind of meets his buddy at the. I don't know what that is. I think they're like salvage yards, and basically tells his buddy, "Hey, I'm going to pay you the money that I owe you. I'm leaving town." His buddy says, "Where are you going?" And Cassian says, "It's better that you don't know." So he basically just tells him, like, "I'm getting the heck out of Dodge. You know, that stuff we talked about earlier, the heat's on and I need to get moving."
So, I'm sorry, I don't mean to dwell too much on this, but I did have one interesting note that when young Cassian was in the ship, it looked like he saw his reflection, and the way he reacted to it might have been like the first time he'd seen his reflection.
Yeah, so that you're right, that's a good point. That he does look in like the shiny surfaces on the interior of the ship and he kind of freaks out. The way
Well, he
they
doesn't freak out. He doesn't like jump. He like looks and then he's like kind of pauses and he looks just like not happy with what he's
he kind of
seen.
gets angry. So the way they film it is he's like looking at this the bulkhead on the ship or whatever. And you don't see the bulkhead, it's off screen. And he just starts to freak out and starts to get angry. So my first thought
And
was
then he
like
starts bashing stuff, yeah.
he saw something on the screen, like he saw whatever on the computer system, and that made him angry. But it cuts, you never see what it is. And then it explains, well, it circles back to that later. So it's worth noting now that you're right. He looks at a shiny surface essentially on the ship and gets angry, and then there's no more explanation, at least not yet.
I thought it was he was just having a bad hair day.
Yeah, I mean, it was entirely possible. His hair did look like crap.
Yep.
So then we see the shuttle land with Stellan Skarsgård, whose character's name is Luthien Rael, I guess. I looked it up.
Yeah.
So he meets up with Bix, and they basically start talking about negotiations on the part that Cassian was trying to sell. And it's a really short scene, but the one thing I did notice, we talked about it last time, was he's carrying something in his hand, and at first I thought it was a cane, but he doesn't have a limp, and he certainly doesn't use it like a cane, but he's carrying this, it looks like a lightsaber, but it's not lit up. You know, I think we talked about it last time, like it looks like one of those toy plastic lightsabers. Mm-hmm. But it seems really weird that he has it in his hand when he's getting off the shuttle, and he has it in his hand when he's walking through the town. It looks like a sword. Is there any real explanation? Am I missing something?
I didn't see anything that overtly explained it. I think if I'm not mistaken, at one point when he's walking, I don't know if it's this scene or another scene later, but he like pushes a button or something and it retracts.
Yeah, I missed that the first time when I was rewatching the episode. You're right. There is a scene where he gets closer to where he's going. Yeah, and he just hits the button and the whole thing like collapses into the handle.
Yeah.
So, yeah, I mean, again, it kind of looks like one of those, you know, those toy like expanding lightsabers you had as a kid and you hit the button and it pops out. It's like the reverse of that. But I don't get the impression that he's, you know, a fighter or a Jedi or... He's just some guy with this weird collapsible sword.
But you do have to admit the way that he walks through, you know, this strange area. I mean, he does it with a confidence that kind of gives you a hint that this dude knows how to handle himself. He walks upright, alert, you know, strong, confident. Bix is trying to catch up to him. He's
in this new place, this new town. He's definitely not scared or nervous or afraid. I mean, yeah, that's a good point.
Okay. I know what it is. I'm calling it right now. I have a perfect explanation.
Okay.
He's blind.
That's what my wife said. Is he blind? I'm like, no, he walks pretty well for not being.
And it's like this blind. Super like sci-fi like echolocation walking stick. Okay, I'll look really smart if I'm right.
Well, see, yeah, it's you're good. Yes, right,
but probably not.
Anyway, so there's not a whole lot there. Just that he talks to Bix and says, you know, hey, I'm here to meet up with this. And pick up this part. And he has some sort of weird sword, which is not super clear yet.
I want to say, like, this part, like, I just want quickly, the outfits looks badass, like, cool as fuck.
Who's some good drip.
Luthien's, Bix, in there when they're walking, like, that little triangle hoodie thing he's got on Luthien.
Okay.
Even in the flashbacks, young Cassian has, like, you know, like a cobbled together wardrobe, but it's like really cool looking. I think like the boots are tied together with rope. You know, he's got kind of like a DBZ type vest that kind of comes out. I just want to comment that I like the outfits. They don't look overly designed, but they do look very cool.
Well, now I'll have to go back and look. I didn't take note of his wardrobe.
I'm with Nuge on this one. That's been something I've been kind of enjoying throughout the whole series so far, is the characters look cool. Regardless of the role they're in, they just kind of look cool for that.
Well, part. like appropriate, but also just cool. Yeah, kind of drippy, kind of cool.
All the outfits are kind of subdued. Like there's nothing super flashy or over the top.
Yeah.
But yeah, they do have a look to them. All right. The next scene is super quick. It's a planet view. So you see, like, you know, from in outer space looking down on the planet, and you see three shuttles. We see a shuttle full of, you know, the investigators that are coming to get Cassian. And then it cuts back, or maybe it's the other way around. And you see that there are three shuttles, and each shuttle's got at least eight guys on it. So they're setting the stage that there are quite a few investigators coming to look for Cassian. There's a quick flashback again to young Cassian. Well, actually, what you see is you see B2MO and Marva. actually a young Marva, because her hair is darker. It's brown instead of gray. And then another guy. Have we seen that guy before?
I didn't recognize him.
I didn't either.
No, me neither.
So they're walking into the crashed ship that Cassian is in. And B2MO says that the air is clean. And they kind of have a debate about whether or not it's safe to be in there. And they decide to give themselves 20 minutes. So that they realize that, hey, there was some sort of poison or something going on in the ship. But they think it's clean enough, according to B2MO. But they're going to get in and get out. The one thing I noted as they're walking, actually, as B2MO says that the air is clean, is if you look at B2MO, he's brand new and clean and his paint is shiny and he's not dented. I mean, clearly this is a flashback to, I mean, when Cassian was a kid. So it's at least 20 or 30 years in the past. So this is probably B2MO in his prime. Yeah. I thought it was cool that they made a point to make him look new and shiny. And so Marva says that they are salvaging 6 brand new fuel nodules is what she says. So there, at this point, it's kind of clear that Marva and whoever she's with, they're salvagers. They're just trying to get parts from this ship. And then, this is, I think, where we see Cassian freaking out and attacking the ship. I think we see him freak out before, but now he actually like gets his staff or whatever he has, and he starts like banging the walls with it.
Yeah.
And so, I mean, that was what I wrote was the reflection. Is he seeing himself or seeing something that he doesn't like, and he's freaking out and he's attacking the walls? Did you guys have a different take on that?
I think I have this one solved.
Okay.
He's blind.
Man, we have just got this wrapped up. You guys want to end the podcast here? I think we solved it all.
This is my thing for it's mine. I copyright that. Yeah. Well, he freaks out when he sees the droid as well. Like, you can tell he's like never seen a droid before, which is understandable. Hmm. I thought that was fun, but
I didn't catch that. So, the guy that's with them tries to talk to Cassian, tells him to calm down, hey, we're going to help you out or whatever. And it's clear that that Cassian doesn't understand the words that they're saying. So there's some sort of language barrier. So Marva sedates Cassie, and she has some sort of syringe that she sticks in his neck, and he passes out. And so Marva and the guy kind of have a debate, like, look, should we leave this kid here? Should we take him? He's got people. He doesn't need us. Like, we're just here to get these 6 brand new fuel nodules. But Marva says to the guy, she says, I'm not leaving him here to die. So at this point, she picks Cassian up and carries him out. So, I don't know. You can make of that what you will. I just thought it was interesting that, this kid she's never seen before and is freaking out. She just decides to sedate this kid and like, all right, you're coming with me, kid.
Yeah. You're getting the context of how they met and just the background of, their kind of relationship starts with a bit of non-consensual, agreements, but anything untoward, but she was saving him, but it was he's kind of being lifted out from his current situation unwillingly,
it immediately answers some questions and then immediately poses some more. It certainly answers, okay, what relationship is Marva to Cassian? How did they become together? Like,
right.
And then it also, because she lifts him out of there, it also addresses that's why he doesn't know his sister's name. He doesn't know where she is. He never saw her again. That's how they became separated.
Oh, okay. Well, that makes sense. That's how they became separated, but he would know his sister's name, right?
He wouldn't know what she would go by if she went off planet, because remember, he had to like hide his identity, so he wasn't from Canary. So she would have to do the same.
Okay, I see what you're saying. So he knows her real name is Samantha or whatever, but he hasn't seen her in 30 years, so he doesn't know what she's going by now.
Exactly. Or in this little weird Lord of the Flies tribal situation, do they even have names? I mean, the leader had a name, Casa, but it could have just been like leader is her name, right? I don't know. Do we know much more than that? Like,
no, we really don't.
I mean, definitively, no, you're right. They've been very vague with those details, but I'm just kind of piecing together.
I think that's a good theory. Can I offer a slightly different theory?
Of course.
What if they're all blind?
Bygone it.
That was the best you could come up with, Jason.
But it does pose some new questions. One,
for sure.
Marva and I didn't catch the guy's name, honestly.
I don't know the other guy's name.
Her partner, they come to the ship prepared. They have the oxygen masks. They apparently have filters. They know the air is going to be toxic. How? Were they involved in the ship crashing?
Did they
sabotage it? Is that just common? Like, is it just a thing to walk around on Canary with air purifiers?
Well, I think it was pretty clear, like, they followed the ship down, because as soon as they I guess you don't see it till the end. I won't get ahead. It's the last scene in the episode, so let's not jump ahead quite yet, because I think it's a good reveal at the end.
Fair enough.
Let's table that for now.
Okay.
Okay, so the next scene after Marva sedates Cassian is you see the investigator shuttle land. You see one of them land on the outskirts of town, sort of near the salvage yards, I think. Actually, now that I think about it, yeah, it was near the salvage yards. So you see, you know, them come out of the ship. You got, and then eight guys, and then it cuts to Marva's house in the present time. She's old now, and there's a knock on the door. She answers the door, and there's eight investigators outside of her door. They have a warrant, and they just barge right in. They toss the place. They start trashing all of her stuff. They try and get Marva to tell them where Cassian is. She won't do it. So they go, and then they threaten B2MO. They said they're going to unplug him. And so, like, Marva's telling B2MO, like, be strong. They can't do anything to you. Don't worry about it. And then all of a sudden, you hear Cassian's voice come out of B2MO, like the communicator that he had in the last episode, and he's talking to B2MO about, you know, keeping Marva safe. And so the investigators hear that, and they trace the incoming signal. Like, one of them gets out like his little tricorder or whatever and says, okay, we see this signal. It's come from this building about 10 minutes away. And they start to go, you know, they're going to go track down Cassian. And right about as they're about to leave, you can see out the windows that there's a crowd of people forming outside of Marva's house, and they're just kind of watching what's going on. And you get the first sense that maybe these investigators are not welcome on this planet. They're not particularly happy to see them.
Well, you can also get that sense as they're walking through it, as they land and as they're walking through the town. I mean, they're getting shifty eyes, but yeah.
Right.
You can tell that, yeah, they are, you know, they're the pigs, so to speak. Yeah,
I think there was actually like a quick throwaway line during that scene where they're walking through the town. Someone says something like, you know, we haven't seen any cops in a while, or something.
Yeah, Blue. I think he says we haven't seen Blue.
Yeah, you're Blue's, right. Yeah.
So I did want to say something about this.
Yeah.
When they're entering Marv's house and they talk. This is probably one of the most disappointing parts of the show to me. Just this one little line where Marva says, don't let them scare you, B. I mean, come on. He's a droid, okay?
What's wrong with that?
I hate when people attribute emotions to droids like this.
Are you serious? Like, C-3PO was a ball of emotions, dude.
No.
He was the biggest fraidy cat in the entire original trilogy.
You're right, but they're supposed to be, like, I hate that too. Like, I really don't like that. They're supposed to be appliances, right? I mean, how do they have, like, fears and emotions?
No way.
Why can't they be more cold and unfeeling like Nuge?
You're like Jason. Look, I have a cold black heart. These robots should too.
It's just like a general complaint I have, like, overall, like, what's the point of it being a droid? Like, if it's just can be like,
I just think they made them more human. Okay. So the droids in the series that are great, right? I mean, you've got your C-3POs, you got your R2-D2s, you've got your K2SO from Solo, which I guess you haven't seen. So you're missing out. I mean, that K2SO, oh man.
No, K2SO was from Rogue One.
And I,
the greatest droid ever.
Yeah, you're right. That's where I was going with
it. He was a good droid. Amazing. So this is the distinction I'm going to make. The droids can exhibit emotions because they've been programmed to but none of the humans around, and especially in the original trilogy, correct me if I'm wrong, none of them say don't be scared or don't worry or whatever. Like,
dude, don't they take that as C-3PO all the time because he doesn't want to go do anything? They rip his arms off and he's losing his mind. And
no, Chewbacca comes. Luke doesn't give a crap. Like, they treat them like appliances for the most part.
Oh, all right.
So like this line really bugs me. I think, you know, C-3PO is a protocol droid. He's programmed to be proper and like to interact with different languages and different people and customs. And so it makes sense for him to exhibit emotions, but not to be like literally, you know, manipulated emotionally, you know, like this would suggest. So
you want all the droids in this just to be faceless AI?
They can exhibit emotions. That's fine, but like to think that they will be like succumbed to fear or an emotion, like to worry, like another character's worried about. Oh, I really worry about what C-3PO is going through right now. Like, no, nobody does that in the original trilogy, and it to me is not good.
You are certainly entitled to that opinion, and I definitely see the validity of where you draw the distinction there between like being able to exhibit emotion because you're programmed to do so versus being able to be manipulated by emotion. That makes sense. But I would propose that this is an advanced enough society that they've been able to push AI to the point where it actually does develop personality. And part of that would be the exhibition of emotion. And I would
point this out. It's another reason I didn't want to see Solo, by the way. Anyway, keep going.
But you look at R2 in the original trilogy, and he's heroic. But he's heroic because he had to exhibit bravery in order to do the things that he did. If he was just a programmed robot, none of that is brave. It's just him executing his code and... suddenly he loses a lot of interest.
He's a dependable droid, and that's what he's treated like in the original trilogy. He's not given an award, and he's not like treated special in as far as like, this particular droid deserves acclaim. Like, they don't that's do exact, that.
But wait,
they
wait
do
a
that in the prequels.
That's exactly what happens in the prequels, though.
Yeah, in the prequels, and that's dumb as dog.
All right, so here's my hypothesis on B2MO. I get the feeling that B2MO is kind of like, he's like a pet, right? He's like a dog or a cat that Marva happens to have. Now, I mean, granted, we only have 3 episodes to base this on, so we don't know his full backstory. But I think, like Doug said, if you've got this advanced civilization and you're able to make a droid, if you're going to make a pet, you know, like a household servant pet, perhaps you would give it some emotions like that so that it's more lovable, right? I mean, I wouldn't want a dog or a pet of any kind that was just a mindless robot. I mean, then you just have a Roomba, right? Like, I don't want a Roomba. Like, I want something that at least cares about
me. All right. So maybe... when Marva says, don't let them scare you, she's like activating that protocol of like, don't fall into your scared protocols, basically.
Yeah. Okay. Sure.
Okay. I could live with that.
All right.
Fair enough.
That's your happy balance.
That's like, we'll take it.
All right. That's if we figure out a way that this can all just revolve around programming, then okay.
Well, I know how computers work. And also in a storytelling perspective, if you want it to be a pet, have it be a pet. If you want it to be a person, have it be a person. If you want it to be a droid, have it act differently than those other options, right? I think it makes sense, totally makes sense in the original trilogy how they're treated, how they act as unique entities, you know, versus humans or animals or creatures or whatnot. So yeah, I don't like when they cross those lines, like kids movies, like Sing. Okay, I'm going on a tangent, sorry, but like this kids movie called Sing, where it's like a bunch of animals, right? Because it's a kids movie and it's animated animals, and like it's a story about them trying to do like a scene pageant or whatever.
Yes,
there's literally no reason why they're animals. There's absolutely no reason other than that they're more like attractive to children. Whereas you have a movie like Zootopia, which really uses the fact that they're animals in a society to a purposeful extent. So,
So hang on a second. Like Snow White and the Seven Dwarfs, why were they dwarves? Why weren't they just regular miners?
I haven't seen Snow White in probably 20 years. So.
Yeah, your argument is invalid, Baker, because it's been a long time
What about
I may have criticisms like with that.
Talking mice. All right, fine. All right, we're moving on. We've determined that Nugent hates robots with emotions.
All right. I'm willing to let this go, but ooh.
All right, so the next scene... All right, the next scene is Cassian and Luthen, and they have now met at this factory. And it's not really clear what this factory is. All I wrote down was that this factory is an OSHA nightmare.
Dude, I actually wrote the same note. I said, not OSHA approved.
Yeah, this factory just has these insanely huge, heavy, I can only guess they're engine blocks or something, hanging from the ceiling on these really small chains. Like, I don't know why the things weren't on the ground. They were up in the air. Just, I guess it just is a good set piece for, you know, this scene, but whatever. So they're in this crazy, dirty, broken down factory and Cassian and Luthien, they're negotiating a price. Cassian's trying to get $40,000 at 40,000 credits, whatever out of him. He says, that the box is still sealed. And I think at one point Luthen says, you know, how do I know it's still sealed, you know, or how do I know it works? And he was like, well, I'm not going to open it because as soon as I open it, you know, then it won't be new and then it won't be worth as much.
It's sealed. It's new in box.
It was exactly what I thought of when I thought of you when he said that. So the one thing that he says, so they're kind of negotiating back and forth, trying to figure out how much this thing is worth. And Cassian, his line is, you can track every imperial coordinate for 9 radial parsecs. So we get a little bit better idea of whatever that NS9, what was it again? The NS9 Starpath unit. You get some sort of idea that it's a tracking device. So I kind of got the impression it was like a radar unit. I don't know. Cassian and Luthen kind of get into it, and he was like, how do I know I can trust you? At one point, Cassian pulls his gun out and puts it like right up in Luthen's face. Luthen keeps his cool. So they kind of have this back and forth and
not seeming to be reacting to the visual representation of a gun in his face.
He starts out, you know, the gun's like 9 inches away, and then Cassian gets more heated, and now it's 6 inches, now it's 3 inches. I mean, at one point, like, his gun is pressed up against Luthen's face, and Luthen is still like just debating with him, like he was not flinching.
So yeah, I'm saying he's not reacting to the vision,
right,
to seeing that in his face,
and okay, he certainly wasn't scared or was anyway. So there's a little more exposition, and Luthen is really trying to get out of Cassian. He's like, where did you get it? He's like, I'll give you an extra 1,000 credits right now if you just tell me where you got this thing. And Luthen says, hey, I know that you and Bix have this deal where you bribe quartermasters to leave valuables on the ships before they're salvaged. So apparently Bix has some sort of side hustle where she's a ship salvager, but she works with some of the quartermasters to leave expensive things on the ship so she can get things off them. He said, but this is way beyond her. This is not that. And the one thing, this is the last part of this scene, was that Cassian basically he debates, he doesn't want to tell Luthen where he got it, but he basically implies that His line was, a uniform, some dirty hands, and an imperial toolkit. They're so proud of themselves, they don't even care. So what he does is he implies that he just had a uniform and he pretended like he was a worker and he just walked onto a ship, picked it up, and then walked out.
Yeah. Yeah, I think what Luthen is trying to gather is Cassian's like sense of the Corpos and the Empire, and like, you know, he says they're so fat and satisfied. And then Luthen retorts with like, their arrogance is incredible or something yes. like that. And so I think he's just trying to get a feel for like his talents, you know.
I think he wants to know like how good is this guy? You know, did he just get lucky and find this in the back alley? Did it fall off the back of a truck, or does he know what he's doing? Right.
Yeah, that's interesting.
So I thought that was interesting that, I mean, clearly Cassian has some skills, you know, as a smuggler and I thought that was kind of an ingenious way that they picked that he picked that box up. Anything else you guys had on this scene?
I do, sorry. I'm just getting like Men in Black vibes with this recruitment, like sort of the older season guy recruiting. I mean, this kind of dynamic has been done many times, but I'm getting some sort of exciting Men in Black, like he's getting pulled into this sort of mysterious thing that's sort of bigger than themselves, gruff older guys, you know.
You think this is like kind of a job interview, like Luthen's interviewing him essentially?
Yeah. Yes. Okay. Yes. Right. That's a good way to put it. Mm-hmm. He knows about his father who was executed by Corpos. Yeah. That was another part. Yeah. Really cool scene. A lot going on there.
I did want to also just touch on that scene a little. Sorry, not to belabor that scene, but I did find it to be really significant. I was actually a little bit questioning, like, why does he just keep asking Cassian questions? Like, the deal is right there. He's got the money. There's the part. But he didn't just take it, which that alone was suspicious to me.
That's interesting. That's a good point. There, he had he had plenty of opportunity just to be like, okay, here's the credit. In fact, he actually gets the credits out of his pocket and says, like, look, here they are. But he doesn't take the box from him. You're right. He continues to basically interview him.
Right.
Huh.
Yeah. I mean, he offers 1,000 extra credits to just figure out how he did it. Right. Or to get more information about him. Yeah.
This whole transaction was not about the box. I mean, it was, but it was more about where did Cassian get it and can I get this guy on my payroll kind of thing.
Plus, we also got to see a little bit more of that, like, super confidence from earlier. Like, how he was walking through town. He wasn't fazed by anything that Cassian was doing. It just sort of gave you this sense that, like, he's on a different level, but he's the master type of...
Huh. Well, I'm glad we're discussing this, because I didn't pick up on his bad attitude the first time, but yeah, you're absolutely right now that I see you explain it. So, all right, so the next scene is super quick. It cuts to Bix's boyfriend. I don't know what the guy's name is, but he's kind of a punk, and basically Bix and her boyfriend get into an argument, and it's she kind of beats out of him that her boyfriend sold Cassian out to the investigators. So they're all trying to figure out how did these guys know who Cassian is and where he was, and it basically comes out that it was her boyfriend. So,
Sorry. His name is Tim, by the way.
I don't care.
And I just wanted to know, like, Tim is quite the Star Wars name. Like, you got like Bix and Cassian and Lutheran and Tim.
It's to be fair, it's Tim with 2 M's.
To be fair.
Oh, I didn't know that.
It was.
Tim. It was Tim. He does not survive this episode. That is true.
Too soon.
All right. So the next scene is it cuts to like the outside of a couple shops and the streets, and you see these townspeople all start banging on these pipes. They just have like pieces of metal and pipes, and they all just sort of start banging, you know, just making a big noise, like New Year's Eve style kind of thing. And it's basically just to alert everyone in the city that, hey, these investigators are in the city. And then you see the city just basically shut down, that the stores are locked up and a lot of, like, you know, they get boarded up and the security gates come down. So at this point, like, the townspeople are aware of what's going on, and they're clearly very unhappy that these investigators are in town.
Or at least afraid of the investigators, right?
Yeah, right. Good point. It's unclear. They're unhappy that they're there, and it's not clear what their motivation is at this point.
Go ahead.
Well, I was just kind of noticing as that scene was unfolding, like, there's sort of a parallel to, like, how gangs in the hood will, like, if they see a cop car coming down the street, they'll be signaling and whistling to each other, you know, letting the whole neighborhood know, hey, cops are here. That's kind of the same sort of vibe that I got. Like, everyone just starts banging on stuff. And it struck me as sort of a tight-knit, like, hood type of community where you can't trust the cops. Those are the security guys, but nobody trusts them.
Yeah.
Yeah, they basically, it tells you that they've been through this before many times, and that they're very low tech. I mean, it's kind of like that guy in the tower banging on on the gong things.
Well, it's highly effective. Yeah. I mean, everybody in the town hears it. It's super simple, and it works. Yeah. So
it's risky because these cops seem to be just able to shoot randomly. It seems like, you know, that's kind of a risky thing to just put yourself out there. And
yeah, at one point, like, the cops are walking through the town and they start hearing all these sounds. And one of them says, "What is that?" And the main investigator says, "Oh, it's nothing. It's just bluff and bluster." Mm-hmm. So at this point, it cuts back to Luthen and Cassian back in the factory. At this point, the factory is surrounded. So Luthen and Cassian are still in the factory. They can hear the cops and or see the cops out the window. So they got to make the negotiation go a little quicker. You see, Luthen asks Cassian if he has his comm link on him. And he says, yeah. And he pulls it out of his pocket and then he stomps on it. And he says, you can't do that because they're tracking that. He says, what did he say? You don't trust anything you don't control or something like that.
Yeah.
And then so Luthen had, before they came into the factory, had set some explosive charges on the door as he was coming in. Like, you don't see it, it's all off screen. And he pulls, like, this, you know, like, detonator out of his pocket and just hits the button on it, and, like, the door just explodes open and a guard falls through and is dead. And so at this point, like, the factory starts to fall apart because of the explosion from this door, and a lot of those hanging metal pieces start falling from the ceiling. And I don't know what they're doing in this factory, but, like, it was a big explosion on the door, but it wasn't that crazy, and, like, the entire building just starts falling down. Like, if you were ever working in there and there was any sort of earthquake or anything, like, everyone in that factory would have been just crushed. Cassian starts to go back to get the box because he had kind of hidden it, I think, into the factory. It wasn't clear where it was, but he's like, I got to go back and get the box because they're trying to escape because now the guards are coming. And Cassian gets shot in the shoulder from a guy that was up on the second level, and then ends up, the box doesn't get crushed, but it gets knocked off of whatever perch it was on. And then Cassian and Luthen crawl out through the chimney, there's a section in the brick where they climb out.
I have no idea, but it was a convenient escape.
It was, yeah. Gosh, yeah.
This was possibly my least favorite scene in the series so far.
Wow. Really?
I hated I loved all the badassery of, like, having set the explosives before and being like, always create your exit on the way in.
Yeah.
Like, that was cool. Total badass line. But then the way Cassian immediately flips to, but I got to get the box. It's right there.
Yeah.
Why do you need it? His main goal was to get off planet. And this dude's saying, hey, come with me. I'll take you off planet.
No. This was his ticket. This was his money bag. Like, this was his bag.
No.
It was worth 40K credit.
It was so easy to get because all he had to do was put on a uniform and walk in, and they're so arrogant that you can just take it from under them.
Well, I don't think it indicates that he needs money right now.
Does he need money? What does he need money for?
He needs money to get off the planet.
Who doesn't need money?
No, he doesn't need money to get off the planet because he's being offered a lift off the planet by this dude.
Yeah,
right,
but
here,
I don't
right
think he, I don't think he trusts Luthen yet. I mean, he, like, literally 30 seconds before this, he still had his gun in Luthen's face.
Yeah, absolutely. Except now it's a pretty binary choice. He can either choose to trust this guy and live, or stay there, not trust him, and die. It, the box has very little to do with any of that.
The box
How does that
means
change
more
the
to him. The box means more to him than almost anything in the show. He's hid it very carefully. He's made sure to have, like, it set up to for a good buyer. Like, this thing
is
the only thing that he seems to care about, including people in the show.
Cassian may have a relationship with this box, but me as an audience, I don't. I don't care about whatever the MacGuffin is. It's gone. I don't give a shit. Sorry, I don't give...
I do. I wrote down the same thing because there's another. So once they're out of the building, they're kind of in this alley and they're running. They're now mostly safe because the guards aren't right on their tail. And Cassian wants to go back again for the box. It's like the third or fourth time. And that's what I wrote too. I'm like, he really, really wants to go back for that box. I understand it's worth a lot of money, but, like, seriously, dude, I mean,
it makes total sense the way he's acting. He's very, he's super desperate. No, I disagree.
It absolutely felt like forced tension. Like, and then we'll have him go back for the box, and we can drop a couple of these, like, maliciously unsafe, like, machinery pieces.
Maybe I'm a more material person, but, like, if my, like, say, complete copy of Chrono Trigger was, like, in trouble, you know, I know it's just money, right? Or
If someone is shooting at you, there's someone shooting a gun at you, and you're like, I could go back for this new inbox copy of Chrono Trigger.
I have no other relationship in this scenario. I have no other relationships that really mean anything. I don't trust anybody else. I don't really have a home, like a solid place to be. I don't really have anything to my name other than this complete box Chrono Trigger.
Yeah,
that's how I view his thing. So,
all right, well, let's move past the box because there's still a decent amount of episode left.
Why should we move past the box? Cassian couldn't get
he clearly could not. Right. All right, so at this point Luthen and Cassian are escaping in this alley. The investigators are still chasing them. They're a little thrown off because of the explosion, but at one point Luthen says, we really need to find a speeder. And then that's kind of where they leave it. So the next scene is you see, so now the town is in an uproar. They're all banging on these metal pots. And so the guards are on alert, and you see Bix is trying to go and, you know, help Cassian, and the guards catch her. And they basically they handcuff her to, like, a drain pipe or something like that.
Yeah.
And she starts to get lippy, and she's still trying to cause problems, and the guard basically throws her up against the wall, and it causes her head to bleed a little bit. And so then Bix's boyfriend shows up in the alley. So there's whatever, like, four guards and Bix chained to this drain pipe, and the her boyfriend sees that Bix is bleeding. It's just a little bit from the head. I mean, it wasn't crazy. It wasn't like she had a bullet wound in her stomach or anything. And he basically kind of rushes them, and the guards just shoot and kill him, right?
Yeah, this is my least favorite scene, maybe in the series so far. Bix is sort of sees the guards and then quickly turns around and runs the other way, like, really suspiciously, and then the guards, like, say, hey, you look afraid or whatever. You seem to be someone that we need to, like, tie up. Like, okay, so, you know, script-wise, this kind of just doesn't make sense other than to put her in danger.
Yeah.
And then Tim, like, suddenly just like, you know.
He just happens to be in the alley.
Yeah, he just rams these guards for, you know, just, like, gets kind of enraged and kind of, like, you know, tries to run at them with nothing armed. I mean, like, they kind of played off like one of the guards seems to have made a mistake. Like, he kind of, like, oh no, I shouldn't have shot him, I guess. But, like, still, he just kind of runs at these guards kind of, like, stupidly. So
I think we can all agree that Tim is an idiot and he's better off dead.
Yeah, I think they both come off really stupid here. I mean, Bix could have played a little bit cooler in the moment.
This was a quick scene, and I didn't really get hung up on it. I mean, the important things are that Bix is trying to help Cassie, and Tim gets shot mm-hmm. and killed.
Things are happening haphazardly, and like the cuts are getting quicker and quicker. The intensity is rising. You can tell that.
Yeah.
And so you are kind of like in a chaotic sense of things. And so I can excuse it for that, but otherwise it's kind of stupid writing.
I actually saw this as an interesting like tipping point, so to speak. I wholeheartedly, Tim is an idiot. I'm kind of glad he's done. His actions were properly motivated, but it was still just...
It felt a little contrived.
Yeah. It wasn't exactly interesting to me. I don't really care about him. He's kind of a jerk for having turned in Cassian. So, oh no, he's dead. Okay. But it was what happened right after that. You know, the way the guards kind of looked at each other, like, uh-oh. We just killed one of the townspeople. And that's the line. Because once they kill one of the townspeople, they know that, like, okay, the townspeople are going to retaliate.
Interesting.
Our lives are now on the line. And that's when it gets really serious. Like, it kicks in. To me, it kind of felt a little bit like Black Hawk Down. Like, uh-oh, the town is against us now. We got to rally. Well, we got to get in position.
With that perspective on it, that's interesting, because the next thing that happens is one of the guards, after they kill Tim, sends one of the investigators back to the quote-unquote the pod, which is, I assume, the shuttle that they landed in. He's like, go get the shuttle. So, it would make sense in a Black Hawk Down scenario, like, holy crap, like, we're deep in enemy lines. We just killed one of them. It's going to be bad news. Go get the shuttle and get us out of here.
Yeah.
Oh, wow. I would not be surprised. I could be wrong. Like, if Tim... Tony Gilroy had actually wrote down or something. That is very, that's a great observation, actually.
All right, somebody Google that real quick. Well, okay. So the next thing that happens is that the guards are talking over the radio because, like, all hell is breaking loose. Like, so there's three factions. There's, like, what, North Faction, East Faction, and West Faction. So the guards are all talking to each other, like, what's going on? You know, where's the target? You know, they're all trying to communicate. And over the air, one of them says, now there's two of them. And the investigator was like, what do you mean there's two of them? So, because up to this point, they think they're just hunting for Cassian. So I think it kind of escalates for the guards right there as well. They're like, okay, this isn't just going to be a simple mission where we just go pick up this guy because it's 24-1. Like, clearly guards have died now, and now there's two of them. So there's more going on here. So the next scene after that, it cuts back to Marva, who is back at her house. And they've left two guards at her house to keep an eye on her while everybody else had already gone on to the factory from before. And so you see Marva sitting in a chair, and you can sort of see out the window, but you can hear the townspeople outside banging their pieces of metal. And it's kind of like unnerving a little bit. And Marva's line is, gets to you, doesn't it? That's what a reckoning sounds like. And then she kind of looks over at the guard. And it, she's playing mind games with this guard, and it's super creepy. Like, I mean, it's got like horror movie vibes. Like, so this guard is stuck in Marva's house, and like the town is going to descend, and it's going to be bad news.
Yeah, it's cool. It could in a different execution, this could have come off really stupid. Like, that's what a reckoning sounds like, you know.
Yeah.
But she delivers the line really well, and like. She has that threatening statement about like when it stops, and the soldiers look really afraid, and it's executed very well.
Yeah. I thought the way that she says it, and the way that it's told from inside of her house, so which is, you know, a relatively safe place, but you can still hear what's going on outside, and you can tell that there's tension building. There was definitely good tension in that, and her delivery of that line was
brilliant. Really, it's solid. Really, really thematic, really cinematic. Like, that's the things I want to note about this episode is, while the logic behind everything may not be like 100%, but it's really thematic, and it holds up to it really evokes a specific feeling and a specific motivation for the characters while taking some liberties with logic, and but not to an egregious extent, you know?
Mm-hmm. Yeah. I would also point out, and I know this is a bit of the low-hanging fruit because they're basically telling you, but the sound design throughout this sequence, not just this one scene either, but just persistent throughout the entire sequence, is really, it's like she says, it gets to you. Like, it adds to the tension of everything. Like,
well, it's really simple, right? I mean, it's not an alarm. It's not gunfire. It's just like a bunch of ticked off people outside banging on metal. Like, you don't know who it is. You don't know where it's coming from. You just know that
the thing it implies, it's what it implies, right? It implies that the people are working together.
Yeah.
It implies the proletariat.
But it's also,
maybe I
picked up too much on this or read too much into it, but it started out as the three strikes. Like, it wasn't just a continuous banging on something. It was 1, 2, 3, pause, 1, 2, 3, pause. Which Baker, as a Boy Scout, you should know that's like an international sign of distress. Like, the
universal. I didn't pick up that it was a pattern, but that makes sense. Oh, yeah.
Wow.
And that, like, persistence,
okay,
like nonstop banging, getting louder, it was a really nice way to complement all the tension that was building. Sure. And you really felt like this whole middle third of the episode was just, everything was just about to pop.
So the next thing that happens, so this guard, so Marva's talking to this guard and he's looking out the window, trying not to poop his pants because he knows what's coming. And all of a sudden, Cassian sneaks up behind him, puts a gun to his head, and basically makes him disarm himself and takes his communicator. So you don't see it. It's all off screen, but the next scene, oh, I guess I'm getting ahead of myself. So he basically disarms this guard. So you know that Cassian has made it safely back to Marva's house. The next scene you see is the one guard makes it back to the pod, the shuttle. And he's trying to get it up in the air. He gets in and he starts taking off. And you see that there's a wire attached to the back of it, like it's anchored to the ground. And you see that the ship basically goes up. He doesn't realize that it's tethered and he can't fly. And it basically crashes into the tower in the middle of the town. What did you guys think about the wire? What do you think about that scene? Because I had a couple thoughts on it.
I guess my first question is, who put that there?
So that okay. So I watched the episode.
Well, they show it.
They did.
Yeah, Brasso. They show him tying a piece of scrap metal to the Corpo ship.
Who's Brasso? Wait.
Oh, the friend, Cassian's buddy in the scrapyard.
Oh, I totally missed that.
I totally missed that too, and I watched the episode twice.
Yeah, it's I guess it's fairly short scene, but they show him kind of going back into the shipyard area and messing with.
The note that I put was, did the workers that were at the shipyard, at the salvage yard, did they tether the ship as a sign of support? Because at this point, like, the whole town is turned on these investigators. So I just kind of assumed that it was the town where they were like, well, look, you know, now that you're on this planet, like, you're not getting off kind of thing. So I thought that was a cool sign of solidarity by the town, but if it was Cassian's friend, then I guess that makes sense too.
I mean, that's still a cool sign of solidarity though,
yeah.
Right?
Yeah, yeah, absolutely.
He's a good friend.
Yeah.
He is.
I wish I had something like that.
You should. It's true.
Sorry. Yeah.
So the pod crashes. So, you know, they're the investigators' hope of getting off of this planet has now gone up in smoke because that ship has crashed. I mean, I guess technically there are three shuttles, but at least one of them is now destroyed. So the next scene, and we're getting to the end of the episode at this point, is you see like a heavily armored speeder coming down the street. You can hear it, you know, it's got standard speeder sounds, and you see all the investigators like look at it and react, and they all just open fire on this thing. And you think it's going to get away because it's heavily armored. I mean, it looks like a tank. It doesn't even look like a speeder. And they blow it up and it crashes. And, you know, nobody gets out of the speeder. And, like, the guards all kind of look at each other and they're like, oh, sweet. Is it over? Like, did we kill Cassian? Did we kill, you know, we do what we came for? And all of a sudden, like, the whole thing blows up, this big explosion, like the door at the factory. And it, like, it, you know, it blows up three guards or whatever. And, oh, no, I'm a little bit ahead of myself. You see, after the speeder crashes, you see a second speeder in the background, and the investigators look over at it, and you see Cassian and Luthen on the speeder, and then Luthen gets out his little detonator and blows up the original speeder and takes out three guards. So there was, so whatever, they had two speeders. They had a fake speeder that they used as a trap, and then Luthen and Cassian escape on the other speeder. And there was a line when, I think when they were in Marva's, it was in the factory, Cassian asked Luthen, how many more of those charges do you have? And you never see anything with it, but clearly the implication is that Luthen put charges on that speeder and then and used it as a trap to lure the investigators in.
Yeah, definitely a cool way to get away.
Yeah, there was a little bit of a, you know, a little bit of a fake out, you know, because you were kind of expecting. Mm-hmm. I was expecting, like, Cassie and Luthen to, like, come out shooting from the speeder or whatever, but nope, they weren't even in there.
Yeah, they had an idea of how many, like, soldiers were, because Karn, you know, spilled the beans. There was only, like, a dozen, so they formulated an appropriate plan, and Cassian had a lot to do with it, which is nice, you know, for Luthen to, you know, understand his recruitment is paying off dividends, so.
So.
Go ahead.
I'm trying to think of how to phrase this. The action in this scene was brief, but it was really intense. I mean, it felt intense. And I think a lot of that had to do with the amount of buildup. So we've been building up to this payoff for, you know, 2.5 episodes at this point. Mm-hmm. But I also noticed a couple of things. One, it's notable that our bad guys, the investigators, aren't stormtroopers. They're not wearing helmets. They all have identifiable faces. You recognize them as people. You see, you know, confidence. You see fear. You see emotion with them. They're not just faceless baddies for our heroes to shoot up in an epic blaster duel. There's an intensity to this scene because you feel like these characters are people.
That's a really good point, because there are a lot of points in, like, the original trilogy where they're just shooting at random stormtroopers and there's no consequences because they're all just completely nameless, faceless bad guys, right? But yeah, you're right.
I mean, that was something that Lucas did in the original trilogy. He put them in helmets so that you didn't think of them as, like, regular people. They were just faceless baddies that you didn't care about.
The main investigator, I had to look up his name. It's Sergeant Linus Mosk. He's the one that's kind of running the show on the ground. And he, yeah, like you said, he's a very distinct character. I mean, it's clear that he's leading this. And yeah, for sure, you get the impression that these are all real people with real lives. So that there was definitely tension. There were high stakes, I should say.
Yeah, but, I had that same in note, Doug. I just want to say, like, these guys aren't crack stormtroopers. They're not, like, you know, in formations, like, really well defined, like, hierarchies and stuff. Like, when they hear one of the comms say, you know, they blew up they blew up some soldiers or something, and then they go, like, what do you mean they? And they're, like, figuring out that, oh, it's two humans.
Yeah, that's what he says. And yeah, there's, what do you mean there's two of them? Right.
And Karn says, Karn, he's the leader, supposedly, right? But he just goes, like, what are we going to do? Just stand here? You know? And Linus, the sergeant, takes the lead. You know, he kind of's like, okay, point taken. Let's split up. And, you know, so he's sort of giving him some credence, but like he's taking the charge. So there's definitely a lot of dynamics going there. It's really, really great to see. You know.
Well, after the speeder blows up, doesn't Karn kind of get a little shell shocked? Like at one point,
his reaction is intense.
He's frozen in fear.
His sequence of reactions throughout the unfolding of all of this is just amazing to me. It was really well acted, really well written, because you see him kind of go from this nervous confidence, like, I've never done this before, but these guys seem like they know what they're doing, I'm tagging along, to, you know, getting the reports that the door blew up and like, uh-oh, things are going wrong, but it's okay, we haven't lost the mission yet. And then the explosion with the speeder and that initial like, okay, we got them, uh-oh, we didn't get them.
Oh, that's
and
a
have
good
men
point.
Down, like just the slow realization that
the sequence of reactions he has is very,
You think evident. That's like, do you think he realizes at that point that I'm not going to survive this?
No, I think he more thinks like he's in deep shit. You know, he's made a terrible mistake.
Remember, all of this stemmed from two guards getting killed. And now he's got how many more bodies as a result of this mission?
And their rescue ship, the pod, has been destroyed. And I think there's a very real possibility. And I don't know, I guess we'll see in the next episode if they're still on the same planet. But I get the impression that like they're not going to get off this planet. Like the town is going to go nuts and probably kill all of them. But who knows?
You know, I took a peek at the IMDb, or I was looking at it, and I accidentally saw that he was credited for 3 episodes. Sorry, that's kind of spoiler, but like I cannot imagine that he's not in more of the episodes. Like
he's dead, man. Those town people are gonna rip him limb from limb. All right, well let's get back on track. Let's finish the episode. We're right at the end. We're running out of time. So you see Karn standing at the wreckage of this blown up speeder. And Linus gets in his face and says, "We have got to leave." Like, you know, he's yelling at him, and Karn does not react. Like, Linus has to get in his face multiple times and grab him by the shoulders and shake him to kind of get him out of this stupor. Like, look, we got to get moving. The speeder's blown up. The townspeople are coming. Like, it's bad news. We need to get moving. And then the very last scene, it cuts back and forth. Between it starts with young Cassian on Marva's ship after Marva has rescued them. I guess I should note before you see B2MO dragging 6 power nodules and Marva carrying a passed out young Cassian, and they get back to Marva's ship having salvaged those power nodules. And she lays Cassian down on this bed in the back. And then it cuts to Cassian and Luthen escaping on the speeder, like through these farm fields. And they get to Luthen's ship. And then they take Cassian and Luthen take off in the ship. And then it cuts back and forth a couple times between Luthen's ship and Marva's ship, because it's the same scene of people escaping a planet. And you see young Cassian, he wakes up from the sedative and he looks out like the windshield of the ship and he sees the sun coming up, and you know, Marva kind of looks back at him and smiles, right? And then it cuts to Luthen's ship and you see Cassian looking out of the same, you know, of the windshield the same way, and you see that he's kind of like, he has this lost look on his face because he's leaving this planet and he's leaving all the people that he's known. And the implication that I took, the way that it cuts between the Luthen ship and Marva's ship, is that Cassian feels really bad about abandoning and leaving Marva. Because I think the implication here is that Marva raised Cassian, that she rescues him from this poison ship and raises him. So she's kind of like maybe the only mother he's ever known, and he feels bad about leaving her. What'd you guys think?
Well, I don't disagree with any of that, but I think when it pulls in on the shot of Cassian, like right at the end of the episode, I think what he's actually thinking about it is not so much Marva, but he's wanting to go back for the box.
Probably. Hey, Luthen, can we swing by the factory on the way out of town? I just got one box to pick up.
Yeah, it's just sitting there.
I actually think that's more plausible than what you're saying about Marva. Like, I think all he's wanted to do is get off that planet. I think it's more indicating that he's kind of been through this ringer before, where his life has been turned upside down, you know, in one era versus another. Like, it's, you know, it's an obvious like play on his life changing, you know, dramatically, drastically.
Yeah.
And mirroring those. I mean, you see a scene of Marva crying as she, I think you're kind of led to believe that she's thinking about that, you know, that past of her.
Yeah.
Beginning with Cassian. And so she's sad about it. Although I don't get a lot from Cassian himself. I don't actually get much.
It may have just been the way that it was cut, but when he was looking out, it cuts from him as an old Cassian looking out the ship. And then it cuts to young Cassian and he's kind of like looking at Marva and they're having this connection. It's the way it cut back and forth. Maybe I'm reading too much into it, but
I do not think that was a friendly look like from Cassian when she, as a child, waking up from being knocked out and then on a strange ship. I mean, I'm confident that we're going to see more of this flashback, and I'm confident that we're going to see a lot of rebellion from Cassian with his situation. Like, he's just not going to understand. He's not going to.
I kind of felt like
anything about it.
The shot of Cassian and Marva on the ship as they're escaping the poison ship was like that's the beginning of their story. Like, that's, she's essentially, you know, adopts him or, you know, takes him in or whatever. So,
yeah, sure.
I'm definitely curious where they're going to go with the story.
Yeah, for sure.
From here, it seems like it's completely wide open. But have we seen the last of all of those characters? I mean, now that he's off the planet, is their story done?
Yeah, I mean, that's kind of my final thoughts on this, is like, what is going to happen with the show? Like, even budget-wise, like, can they really pull something like this off every three episodes? They've completely abandoned this planet. There's no reason to go back. All of these characters are almost irrelevant to, you know, kind of the future story. I mean, I would be so impressed. I mean, obviously they're going to come back. They're important, but where they're going, I don't see any indication of coming back as far as like,
I think you're right. I don't think future old Cassian comes back, but I bet you they flash back to this planet a lot and they explain Marva and his relationship. I bet they explain why the investigators are not liked on this town. I think they flash back to a lot of.
Does that mean Tim comes back to life?
Oh no! Mm. All right, I'm not tuning in anymore.
Should we wrap this up? Scale of 1 to 10.
We should. Yeah, scale of 1 to 10. Doug, go.
I loved the intensity of it. I loved the whole action sequence. I loved how brief but impactful it was. I'm going to give this a high one, probably 9.
Jason?
Yeah, you know, and me and Doug are on the line. I guess like 9 is where I was going to put this, because it's really pays off everything that the last two episodes were leading up to. It has amazing action sequences that don't feel too contrived, has amazing events, explains things, but then adds questions. Just a super impressive show. I am almost like flabbergasted about where this show can go from here.
Yeah.
Like I said, the budget, like this town had so much detail, so much thought put into this town, and life, they're just gone. And all the characters, we're just going somewhere else now.
Yeah.
So I'm going to be very curious to see where it goes, and excitedly so.
And what about you?
Yeah, I agree. Like, so the last two episodes, I think I give the last two episodes a six each because it was just a lot of filler and a lot of buildup. But I think, yeah, you're right. It absolutely paid off in this episode. I think, except for a couple, like, you know, weirdness, you know, like the factory was just kind of like it was a weird set piece, and you know, a couple of the lines were a little cheesy. But otherwise, I think the whole episode just paid off. And yeah, I give it a solid 9 out of 10, almost a 10 if they had just polished a couple of those things. But yeah, absolutely. I'm stoked. I wasn't super excited about the show until this episode, but yeah, I'm really excited to see where it goes now.
So that was nines all the way around.
It was. We're in agreement. Wow. First time for everything. All right. That's about it. Jason, you want to sign us off?
Logic very old.
Oh my god. It gets better every time. All right, gentlemen. We'll talk to you later.